Good.
You've taught him well.
It's more like he's remembering than I'm actually teaching him anything.
Sometimes the student guides the master.
I've been waiting for you, Obi-Wan. We meet again at last.
This is Waiting for Obi, a Star Wars podcast.
Well, I hope it doesn't take too long. I have work to do.
Join us as we explore the stories told in a galaxy far, far away, providing narrative context and reactions to Star Wars on Disney Plus and beyond.
Hello there.
And now, Waiting for Obi, with your hosts, Jason and Kim.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Book of Boba Fett. That is not the name of our show.
That's not the name of our show. What podcast are you recording?
Welcome back to another episode of Waiting for Obi, where we're going to talk about The Book of Boba Fett, episode 6, From the Desert Comes a Stranger.
Hi, everybody. This is a wild episode.
Wild. Dave Filoni has been watching too many spaghetti westerns.
Yes, I think that's what it is. Like, this is,
Dave Filoni also directed this episode, so a lot of
things
make sense because of that.
Yeah, that is very true. And I forgot to mention in our last episode that was Bryce Dallas Howard that directed episode, chapter 5. She directed a couple Mandalorian episodes too, and darn it, she's as good, if not a better director than her father.
You said it. But before we get into the amazingness that is this episode, which a lot of people are saying revive their Star Wars fandom, which I have thoughts on that.
I guess philosophy. I didn't need it revived. Okay. Well, mine is still pumping along. But
yeah, right. Me too. You sent me something earlier today that I thought was quite intriguing.
Yeah. So, I don't have my official source to quote it from, so I believe it was, an official thing that I feel comfortable saying that it's an authorized source. Anyway, that was rambling, if ever there was rambling, while I looked for something. Andor, the Disney Plus series that we haven't even seen an episode of yet, is already slated to have a second season.
And I like that.
It's that good, apparently.
Apparently it is. Well, you look at something like the Obi-Wan series, which feels like it's designed to be a mini series, like a contained story from start to finish, kind of like a lot of the Marvel shows. Like, there's, aside from Loki, there's really not much that's happening in the others that warrant a second season. But I could totally see them approaching Andor as an episodic or there's multiple arcs that could be explored with his character before you hit Rogue One, where...
I have a totally different idea as to why. It's because K2SO is voiced by Alan Tudyk, and Alan Tudyk is Disney's Lucky Charm.
Oh, yeah?
Look at all the animated movies that he is in that did so much better than they expected, because he's in there voicing a character. He is their Lucky Charm.
Interesting. Okay.
He's even in Encanto. He plays a toucan.
Does he really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Good job, Alan Tudyk.
Super random stuff. He was Hey in Moana.
He did mocap K2, didn't he? Also?
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was a big... Anthony Daniels was like, hold up. I've had to be in the suit the whole time.
Oh, that's right.
And you got to motion capture it? Like, what? I mean, now he did have to walk on stilts. There's a lot of images of Alan Tudyk in mocap stuff, but on stilts.
Right. Yeah.
So they looked in the right spot. But I do remember when that was first coming out that Anthony Daniels was like, hang on a second. I've been in this suit the whole time. So props to Anthony Daniels. But yeah, Andor already has a second season before we've ever seen one episode. Pretty exciting.
That is pretty exciting.
We only talk about exciting stuff here on Waiting for Obi, Jason. I thought you knew that already.
We do. What was it? Of course, it's purely rumor, and I've seen this so many times, but it's resurfaced again, this idea that Dave and John are in the process of recrafting the sequel trilogy to change the narrative of it.
I don't see it happening.
I don't either. I think that's, I don't know if that's just really wishful thinking from a certain part of the fan base. I don't know.
I think that's a lot of it.
I could go either way as long as they keep the characters. I would love to see, I mean, I would love to see some of the characters treated differently, but, you know, if they never are, then I will still enjoy Star Wars for what it is. And
I would like to see them give Daisy Ridley better dialogue to act with.
Oh, yeah? I'd like to see Finn in more than episode 7, so.
That's fair.
And Paige. Oh, I'd love to see more of Paige. Not Paige, Rose. I'd love to see more of her.
Right. But. Oh, yeah, for sure. So who knows? Maybe there are other ways that they can approach stories of those characters that would maybe fill them out a little bit more.
I could also,
but I just don't see them going back and retconning the whole thing.
Right, no, and I see a lot, and I've said this before on the show, I see a lot of the work they're doing in all of the Disney Plus stuff to give legitimacy to where the sequel trilogy landed.
Mm-hmm.
But I know...
Well, look at... we talked about that cloning in The Bad Batch. We talked about that because now it's... how many Palpatines could there... Like, we talked about that.
Right. And I think... And we'll get to a little bit in this one, too. You know... Because there are certain parts of this coming episode, this episode we're talking about now, that are like, knowing what happened in the sequel trilogy, it's like, meh. But anyways.
Yeah,
I shouldn't go any further because you haven't told them.
No, because we have to spoiler warning all you friends. I don't know what I was going to say.
I don't know either.
I don't know. This, just like last episode, this is a big old blanket spoiler because... There are so many things that appear in this episode that hopefully, if you've watched some other things, we're going to try to give you some narrative context, but hardly anything from Star Wars is off the table.
That's true.
In this episode. We're not going to, if you don't, again, if you don't know some of the big stuff, hey, by the way, Vader's Luke's dad, then
Kim, I can't help you with how that. Dare you?
You've been warned. We are at least going to try to connect some of the dots for you.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to, there's a couple backstories you need to know going into this particular episode. We do open this episode with, on Tatooine with Cobb Vanth. Cobb Vanth is a character we saw once or twice in season 2 of The Mandalorian. He was actually introduced in the Aftermath Trilogy book series where we learn about, They kind of redo his story a little bit in The Mandalorian, not too much to, you know, frustrate too many canon aficionados. This idea that Cobb was kind of looking for a purpose in life and found his way to the Jawas and ultimately got Boba Fett's armor, which is what made him became the marshal of Mos Pelgo, which they have renamed Freetown in this episode. So Cobb shows up at the beginning of this episode, and so if you've never seen The Mandalorian Season 2, you're like, who is this guy, and what does it matter? But we're starting to see a little more connection with the main plot of Boba Fett in here. They're in the middle of this, basically, farm of moisture evaporators out on the outskirts of the city, and Cobb, who is, you know, the self-proclaimed protector of this city, comes across four pikes who are in the middle of a spice transaction. Spice being the bad thing that people... sell,
right?
The Star Wars drug wars. If we want to go that route,
because we have no idea what anyone does with spice. They just sell spice.
We don't know. I think people do get high off of it, but I don't know. They may put it on their rice when they make dinner.
That is a thing that you can buy, FYI. It's not drugs, but you can buy spices to put on your rice for dinner.
Yes.
Moving on. Anyway.
So the pikes look like they're getting ready to take him down, but, you know, he's already ready for them. He tries to encourage them to get lost. Ultimately, he shoots 3 of the 4 of them, which is great. And let's
watch that scene twice because at first I thought he got 3 guys with 2 shots.
Yeah. There were 3 shots, I hope.
There were 3 shots, but he 100% Westerned that one, like, well, pow, pow. It was pretty good.
Yeah. So the fourth one, he is basically like, you know, leave the one guy who's probably not going to do anything dumb and tell him to go tell all the people to never come here again kind of situation. We've seen that story trope multiple times. He does that one here and then tells the guy to leave both the both the credits and the crate of spice behind. Mm-hmm. Now, Cobb does let the spice kind of float off into the wind instead of, you know, using it to sell it to make millions of credits because that's bad. And then he has his Camtono credits. The Camtono being the legendary ice cream maker from Empire Strikes Back, which is now has a purpose.
Isn't that great?
I love it.
That was such a tiny, tiny, tiny little thing to notice.
Yeah.
Completely unrelated. We do sometimes reference Wikipedia, and I just want to point out that a line on Wikipedia states that the Pikes are confronted by an elderly human man named Cobb Vanth. And I don't feel like he is being portrayed as an elderly human man.
Someone go in there and re-edit that.
Somebody fix Wikipedia. Right. That just made me laugh. I was reading that going, he's not old. Like, I mean, he's got a little gray in his hair, but Cobb's still rocking it.
So that's storyline one that we're kind of tracking in this episode.
Mm-hmm,
the
mm-hmm.
next piece is we have Din and his new
hot rod.
His hot rod, his N1 starfighter, who I actually heard someone try to credit this as the one that Anakin flew in the Battle of Naboo.
And I feel like that's reaching. But I think I had seen that too.
Yeah.
It's just like what he flew, but I don't know that it's the one that he flew.
True. And there aren't a lot of starfighters that have hyperdrives. The N1 is one. And Din has traveled from Tatooine to this luscious green planet. Reminds me a lot of Ahch-To, where we found Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. Just not as much water, a lot more green.
Did we, in the beginning of the scene, isn't this when the Jawas have that giant crate dragon on top there? Was that here? Or was that later on? Is it later on?
It's either later on or in the last episode we missed it.
No, it's definitely this episode. Anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
That's a tie-in. Anyway.
Yeah, so,
there's kind of this oh yeah, because he just says, hey, I'm here looking for... We see our good old R2-D2 buddy.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it's almost like Luke left the coordinates for Grogu with the Mandalorian. Like, we're going to be over here, so come hang out with us sometime.
Yeah, somehow he had to know, because we don't know where he is. We just know that it's some kind of green forest world, right? Like, right. There's no indication, but lo and behold, well, what's really cool is this opens up and for a half second you think, oh, Grogu's floating rocks, and it's not. It's just some mech thing moving rocks around.
Yeah.
And then we get to see our good buddy R2.
I think what is important to note is that it has been 5 years since the end of Return of the Jedi. And there's very little we know about Luke Skywalker from this time, but we do know that he spent a lot of those 5 years looking for information about the Jedi lore, stories of the Force, how the Force can be interpreted by other cultures. We've seen that a lot in Star Wars. We've seen it with the Dathmerians, with the witches of Dathmere, and how they use the Force mm-hmm. for their kind of their Force magic. We saw it with in Rebels with Zebarelios' tribe and their kind of belief in how the Force is used. Luke's experienced a couple other things in this time, so he's come a long way in his knowledge of what the Force is and could be. And I guess it clearly at some point in time he's come across, I don't know if he's come across the books that he has in The Last Jedi or not. But
oh yeah,
we do find out in this episode that Grogu's is kind of really his first trainee.
Yeah. Which is, well, and I guess because what we're coming up on is it looks like these androids are just building some sort of structure for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so my immediate thought was like, okay, is this the school that we know that Luke eventually has?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of what I was guessing. But yeah. I do. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say even on this planet, we have two different storylines because we have Din chilling out with R2, watching these droids build this stone thing that, and clearly they're building this stone temple to look like what Luke probably discovered in Ahch-To when yeah. he was on his original travels. So like, there's this idea that we're going to kind of channel the origins of the Jedi here in our architecture. But they built him a bench to, like,
that was hilarious.
Chill and wait.
Like, R2 goes into hibernation mode, and he's like, yeah, what is, okay, is this the bench that he just...
Yeah.
Has to take a seat, pal. Like going to the doctor's office. Wait here and someone will be with you shortly.
And we cut over to Luke actually training Grogu somewhere else on this world.
We assume.
And this is the scene with where Grogu's distracted by the meditation and just trying to use the force to levitate a frog so he can eat it.
Little dude likes frogs, man.
He does.
I'm gonna tell you, full disclaimer right now. I'm okay with Luke. Luke and I have been okay for the majority of me watching the whatever. This episode makes me want to punch Luke. Like, we'll get into more as to why in a few minutes. But feed the dang kid. He wants a frog. Let him eat the frog.
Oh, he's not a kid. He's 50 years old.
Well, then feed the hungry 50-year-old. He's a growing boy. But it was funny. Like, you could tell, like, and that was so reminiscent of when we first met Grogu. Him liking to eat the frogs.
Yeah.
With when he was, and that was what, probably episode 2 or so of The Mandalorian?
Right. Yeah.
But, yeah. Grogu manages to float one frog. Luke kind of shows him through meditation how he could then, you know, levitate all the frogs.
Mm-hmm. And this is And there's a lot of this training that parallels back to Luke's training with Yoda, right?
Oh,
this is
so much.
Very much this idea. I mean, when Yoda levitated the X-Wing, that's kind of, yep. You know, I'm going to show you what the Force can do. You know, not just one frog, 100 frogs.
All the frogs.
Yeah. He does have this moment where he's talking about Yoda with Grogu because, he reminds them of him. And then he has this, like, weird, like, Spock, I'm going to do a mind meld and trying to find out your past history thing going on here. Where we actually see Grogu's like memories that he's repressed from when the clone troopers were destroying the Jedi Temple.
Yeah, so Order 66.
Yeah.
So, add this to the column of reason number one, Kim wants to kick. He makes him relive his trauma. For what benefit? I think the showing of him being distracted by the frog kind of shows that Grogu's still kind of struggling with this training, and maybe Luke's trying to get to what is the thing that is roadblocking him.
Yeah.
And that's why he's talking about home and that sort of stuff. But poor little guy has to relive Order 66.
Right.
Although, side point, they did a much better job on the animation and deepfake of Luke's face this time.
Yeah, well, they hired that guy who, like, did it on YouTube.
And they also just didn't show Luke's face when he was talking.
Yeah, a lot of times. Yeah.
But this was done really well.
Yeah.
For a brief moment, I thought they hired Sebastian Stan.
And I think the audio, the deepfake of the audio is amazing.
Yeah.
They did give credit to Mark Hamill. I don't know if he recorded the audio and they just de-aged it. Or if they just gave credit to him for being there, maybe.
Because it's sort of him. I don't know. Because his voice has changed so much in that amount of time.
But I was I loved what they did with him in this so much better than the end of season 2 of Mando.
Yep. They heard us. I feel like they heard the fans going, whoa, 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 hold my beer. I can do this better.
Well, yeah, here's these 7 YouTubers who can do a better deepfake than you. Like, at least get one of them. And they did.
Yeah, which is really cool. But you're right, this whole scene was super reminiscent of Luke training with Yoda.
Yeah.
I mean, so much as to Grogu in a backpack.
Right. We cut back to Din chilling on the bench, and we find Din not greeted by R2 or Luke, but Ahsoka, who's also chilling on the planet for some reason.
She didn't have her own bench, though.
And that was the first moment in the show I was like, okay, this is cool.
Yeah, there's a lot. Well, this is a moment as fans, I think everybody, now that we knew that the timelines could cross,
mm-hmm.
everybody has questioned, have Ahsoka and Luke ever interacted? Like, I feel like this was a big thing that fans have been hoping and asking for.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be interesting, and I hope maybe someday they can explore what Ahsoka was doing during the original trilogy. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
To come up with the story that, like, how does she fit in all this and why wasn't she around?
Yep. Because she does tell him that she's an old friend of the family, which was a great line.
Tells that to Dent. You're right, for sure. So, you know, and Ahsoka is there to guide Din to say, you know, do you really want to go see Grogu? Because that could, you know, destroy everything that is happening here. Because this whole idea of Jedi and attachment, I'm sure we'll get into that when Luke makes it, when Luke presents the two choice problem.
Let me tell you, these dang Jedi not learning from their past mistakes. Why did Anakin struggle so much? Because he had attachments. Like, blah. Like, it aggravates. I'm like, you know, there are ways around this, whatever. Other Obi-Wan had attachments to had a blah, 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 his girly friend whose name escapes me. And I mean, you know, she met a bad end, but
you're not proving your point here, Kim.
I'm not proving my point. I'm digging a hole. I don't know. It just, I feel like both Luke and Ahsoka, like, what's her face? The armorer are, this is the only way that you can be a Jedi, mm-hmm. is to follow these specific strict rules. And how many times do they have to relearn the same lesson?
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Soapbox put away for a moment.
There you go. So Ahsoka, he does agree, or he kind of chooses to give the armor to Ahsoka to present to Grogu ultimately, or to give to Luke, or however that transaction went down. And he does not go see Grogu, because she makes this claim that if Grogu sees him, that Grogu is going to want to go with Mando and not continue his training, just because there is so much of a bond between the two of them.
Well, Mando just explains that Grogu, you know, like, hey, he's a Mandalorian. He's part of my clan. He's part of my, you know, group. And I just want to make sure that he's safe. He mm-hmm. does at least get to see him from a distance training, but this shows the emotional toil that both of them are experiencing. Mm-hmm. Din is experiencing not being with Grogu. And I think that kind of connects the dots of seeing Grogu struggling in some of his training for probably the same reason, because Ahsoka tells him that Grogu misses him very much.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's his daddy.
Yeah.
Ahsoka and Luke.
So we do get this basically a training montage with Grogu and Luke.
Grogu jumping,
learning how to jump, running through the forest. There's the training remote scene, which harkens back to Luke's training remote on the Falcon in A New Hope, as well as the training remotes with Rey during her training in The Rise of Skywalker, and yep. all the training remote scenes we've seen countless times in the animated shows. So we get this, and which is cool, because we're starting to see Grogu learn more and more on how to control the Force. Mm-hmm. And we come to find out towards the end, Ahsoka does come talk to Luke and says, you're doing a pretty good job with him. And he's like, I think he's learning. It's like he's learning to remember how to use the Force, not that he's training him. Like,
yeah.
He's been trained before, and now Luke is just kind of helping him remember, which is kind of
cool. Because it seems like he suppressed all of that. Yeah. Well, I mean, you go through a traumatic experience like what Grogu did in Order 66, and we get that brief moment of at least seeing that he witnessed the other Jedis being killed and that there were clone troopers running towards him.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I don't know when we'll learn more of what he went through, or maybe who saves him at that point. Because it looks like he's still in his little eggshell thing.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have that moment between Ahsoka and Luke.
Absolutely. I think that was, for me, that was the moment in this episode that was my favorite. Especially because Luke, for this whole time, has been very much the master. And looking at Ahsoka and having this little conversation with her, you can really see that he treats her as the master, as the one who has lived more and experienced more. Especially when mm-hmm. she turns to him and says, you remind me of your father. And I was like, because clearly they've had this discussion that she knows that how much she knows about Anakin and how much she knows about, you know, Luke's father before he was redeemed. I'm sure at this point, Luke, you know, at some point, Luke probably expressed to Ahsoka how at the end he rejected the dark side and was redeemed towards the end, which is something that Ahsoka was not able to do, which we saw play out in mm-hmm. Rebels. So those are some really cool moments to kind of see that whole, in just a couple of lines, know that that whole story has kind of gone full circle for Ahsoka, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I think as fans, we kind of want to see it, right? Because I think of how important and meaningful it would be for Luke to learn what his father was like before.
Yeah. So we're finally...
And that gives him an opportunity for that, which is really cool.
Yeah. So we do get finished with our Jedi sequence for now. And Din heads back to Tatooine and heads over to Boba Fett's palace and where all the ladies are. Gamorrean guard greets him, which is finally, we're like, okay, so we're getting back to the Boba Fett story. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is what we knew was going to happen. Din was asked to become part of this group by Fennec, and now he has finally arrived. And Boba and Shand are out there briefing everybody on what is happening with the Pikes and kind of
what well, they
don't have a plan yet. They're just really talking about, hey, this is happening and we need to do something about it. We now have our muscle with Black Chrysanthemum and Din. I'm like, really? You got two guys.
I immediately went, I don't think you're using that word and I don't think you know what it means. Right. I'm thinking what we've seen and even the reports back that we've seen of the Pikes. This is not, I mean, not to say that these are not amazing fighters. We've seen all of them take on, they can handle a lot more than your typical fighter can, but I don't think that I would call that enough. And we've got, and I thought it was weird. It took me a minute to figure out why Mock Shaz was in there or his major domo was in there, but it looks like that they're forcing him to give them intel on the mobilization of the Pikes.
Yeah, it seems like he's still captured from their big chase scene two episodes prior.
That makes sense, because I feel like we never had a chance to... We saw that, you know, he biffed right into the stuff and assumed, but we didn't really see that next phase of what they did with him. Yeah. So,
well, here he is.
Yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of... There's still not a lot of folks in on this yet.
And just like the end of, you know, the key moments of every episode for the past three episodes... shit, Fennec's like, we need some reinforcements, and Din's like, I got you covered. I was like, yeah. Really? And at this point, I could have sworn he was gonna go get like Bo-Katan and like go with his darksaber.
That's what I thought.
Pull
too.
Some Mandalorians into this crisis, but
yep, that's what I thought too. But nope.
But no, if you look at, I mean, we've got to kind of go back to the beginning of the episode. What was the relevance of bringing, Cobb Vanth into the
elderly
story.
Cobb Vanth.
and here it is. So here's your Sandcrawler.
That's where it was. So this,
go ahead.
Yeah. So this throwback was that this dragon head on the top of this Jawa, what do you call the
Sandcrawler
transport? Yeah, their Sandcrawler. Is the one. This is the skull of the one that we saw killed in Mandalorian season two.
Why would, well, one, how did they get that up there? And two, why do they want it? They're not like Jawas are like,
because somebody will buy it from them.
I guess.
But how cool does it look on the front of their Sandcrawler?
That's true. They look pretty awesome.
It's very, that felt very, Firefly to me anyway. Different cowboy spaces, cowboys.
Yeah, so Din parks on the outskirts of town where our resident red shirt sheriff Scott shows up.
Dude, this guy Scott's kind of annoying.
Yeah, he's like, I gotta earn my keep, and I was like, who is this guy? And then of course Cobb shows up and says, a deputy, you can leave this one to me. So I guess, yeah. You know, he's deputized an assistant, so he doesn't have to work all the time.
And it was so funny, like, you can't park your ship there, which is very Spaceballs to me.
Yeah.
And he's trying, and Den's like, whatever, man, I'm not moving. Like, sure. Yeah, okay, just, Den was never going to move his ship.
Right.
That was never happening.
Din offers to buy Vanth a drink, which of course, that's always a good way for them to start a conversation. I think that's
always,
that's exactly how the conversation started previously, where Vanth offered to buy Din a drink.
I thought it was sweet though that their exchange starts with him, Mando referencing, how you doing since you don't have, you know, your really cool armor.
Yeah.
And Cobb kind of shoots back like, well, where's your little buddy? And he does say like, It looks like we both lost something that we were fond of.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was sweet.
So it's inside where Din pitches the idea to Vanth, like, your people can fight well. Like, can you come help us out? Because at some point, the Pike's going to take control of the entire planet. Like, no city is going to be left alone.
Mm-hmm. And these people have shown their worth because they did help take out that great dragon.
Yeah. And I think at some point, Vanth does say, hey, our debt's square. Like, I don't owe you anything. Because the armor was the deal, for him to help them kill the crate dragon.
Yeah.
In that previous episode. So, like, there's no debt owed between the two of them. So this is Din coming and asking for a favor. And also saying, like, we got tons of money. Like, we can pay everybody who comes to fight.
Yeah. Well, and to your point, too, that it's, like, the same thing that Boba was trying to tell the other crime families. Of the Pikes just aren't coming for one little area. They're going to start in one spot and then spread out. Cobb's already seen it because he, in the beginning of this episode, takes down three guys for trading spice. So that's gonna, if they just, this isn't our problem, it's gonna become their problem.
The Weequay bartender is like totally like, this isn't our problem, really trying to convince Cobb that they shouldn't get involved. And Cobb really, his conversation with Din is left like, we're not going to help you. Or, I don't think Din leaves thinking that he's kind of won them over yet.
Right.
But Cobb clearly has something else in mind because he'd ask his deputy to round up the city, round up all the fighting folk. And the Weequay is like, this isn't our problem. And he's like, it may be after they hear what I have to say, which I think probably ties into his interaction he had with the Pikes in the beginning of the episode.
That's what I would think too. Cause he, I assume no one knows that went down except for Cobb.
Right. But then we get to the moment of the episode that every Star Wars, fan screamed at, the stranger who the actual from the desert comes a stranger. We look and we get the shadowy figure of a man coming through the desert, which is the every Western trope ever. And
it's such a good Western shot anyway. It is, right? Like, it's so memorable.
And for most people who have kind of absorbed some element of Star Wars beyond the films. Instantly recognize this figure that was coming through because there are very few Star Wars characters that wear a hat, that a cowboy hat, like legit cowboy hat. And then coming through the desert, in kind of on a in a standoff with Cobb, is our good friend Cad Bane showing up for the first time in live action.
I immediately knew without checking that this was a Filoni, like, because he's the one that really takes on these legendary characters.
Yeah. These are characters that he helped bring to life in the Clone Wars. He used them a lot in Rebels. Most recently, Cad Bane did show up in several episodes of The Bad Batch as one of the bounty hunters for hire. Cad has this long history of being like one of the most ruthless, feared bounty hunters across the galaxy, and he really has no good bone in his body, honestly.
Right? This is who we saw Fennec fight. Mm-hmm. In The Bad Batch. Young Finnick.
I mean, he was at one point hired to try to steal some Jedi holocrons. I want to say he was hired by Palpatine or Dooku, one of the Sith folk. And he'll work for anybody as long as the money's right. And clearly, in this case, he's actually working for the Pike Syndicate.
Yeah, and there's... If you even just go out to the internet on YouTube and look for some reactions to Cad Bane showing up, I think you can grasp the depth of people being surprised by, because nobody saw this character coming.
No,
I don't think.
Not one bit.
Nobody expected him being in The Bad Batch was a surprise. Never expected to necessarily see him here. And then everyone is waiting for the moment that he opens his mouth because they did use the same voice actor.
Mm-hmm.
So that Cad keeps the same voice from, animated into live action.
Yeah,
it was really exciting, honestly, because you still know when he's out there that that's who it was, but he still keeps his face down. And it's really not until he looks up with his red eyes that you just totally get the depth and kind of scariness that is Cad Bane.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see where he's going with his appearance. This whole thing's wild.
Yeah, because he just basically tells Cobb that whatever Fett's paying him, that they'll match it.
Yeah. Like, he just wants them to stay out.
Just to stay put. Yeah.
And how they know about this, that's the other thing you have to ask a question is how did they know that they were going to get recruited? Like, who's watching who? Where are the ears and eyes?
Yep.
And this also starts to show that, you know, the Pikes are starting to make their move too, because we quickly see a scene where the Pikes take their ice cream maker into the local cantina, which
oh yeah,
a lot of people think you know
that happens here after this. Yeah,
normally where a lot of valuables are stored, but in this case they've got themselves a little explosive, which blows the cantina up. Many people have noticed that our friend Max Rebo was not playing in the band that night, so maybe Max Rebo is still around.
Yeah, that was The Untouchables. That was a throwback to the movie The Untouchables.
Oh yeah.
That scene. It's a very similar scene to where it's a little kid. It's like, "Hey mister, you forgot your," and then it same thing.
Yeah. So Garza,
it feels like the Pikes need to be involved with it, like would be involved with Bane. I don't know. Could it be retaliation from the Pikes for Cobb killing those three?
I don't know.
But
the Pikes are making their move, and hopefully, I mean, I don't know if Garza survived this explosion or not. I liked her character.
I know, because the droid had it, but if the way that explosion happened outside of that canteen, it looks like very few people inside of that would have made it.
Yeah.
And that's not the only, you know, potential deaths that we see in this, because now we have this showdown between Cad Bane and Cobb.
Yeah.
Very Wild Wild West. And of course, the annoying little Scott, here he comes, Deputy Scott, getting in the way, running his yap. I think Cobb had it somewhat under control, and this is very, like, standoff. I mean, everybody's, all that we know is that Cad Bane shoots both Cobb and Scott.
Right. And he shoots Scott multiple times, like, Scott's done.
Scott's done. He's a red shirt. He's gone.
I imagine that Cobb is still alive, but because he only gets shot once in the side, but we're not sure because we did not get to see him moving towards the end of that scene.
I kind of thought that too. Regardless, now you suddenly see, well, that may change the motivation of the people of Freetown.
Yeah, that may actually have been a mistake for Cad, because that may propel Freetown to get involved even more than they would have before.
Because they were going to, I think a lot of them would have wanted to stay out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so here we are. We've got the explosion at Garza Flip's sanctuary. We've got the Cad Bane getting involved in the situation over at Freetown and, leading into what is supposedly the last episode of the series. And I don't know how they're wrapping this all up in one episode. Even if the episode's an hour and a half long, I don't know. Heading with this. But we do get one last scene over on the Jedi planet that is Kim's least favorite scene, I believe.
Kim's going to punch Luke Skywalker.
Where Luke is sitting down with Grogu inside his newly built little temple. And he shows Grogu the little Beskar chainmail that
adorable
Mando brought down. And then he shows Grogu Master Yoda's old lightsaber.
Which has that lightsaber has a whole other like argument behind how did Yoda's lightsaber get to here? But
sure,
I don't know that we'll ever chase down that story or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a lot of debate.
Yeah, and you know, who says Yoda couldn't have made a lightsaber along the way?
I mean, he was 900 years old. There's got to be a couple of them floating around somewhere,
right? I mean, look, they just threw lightsabers at Anakin and Obi-Wan in Episode 2 when they were caught by the whatever.
But this Coliseum is where. Yeah, this is where they get as firm in their doctrine as the armor did with Din. I feel like this is a very similar scene that says, well, you know, here you go, Grogu. Because earlier on, Luke does mention to Ahsoka that he feels like Grogu's heart isn't in it in his training. And he's not sure why. And so he's basically leaving him with this choice of go with your armor, and then you'll go home, like, then you'll go rejoin the Mandalorian and be part of his tribe or his crew or whatever you want to call it. Or, but you're going to forsake the ways of the Jedi because you've given into attachment for those that you love. Says the guy who had a crush on his sister.
But he didn't know about it to the attachment rules back then.
Uh-huh. Like, it was good for the goo. I just, double standard, Luke. Double standard. And the reason, like, so the reason I got so fired up about this was because in our last episode, we talk about Tara Vizsla, who created the Darksaber, who was a Mandalorian and a Jedi. And I felt like that was some foreshadowing to here we are presented with Grogu, who could potentially be, because Din's never going to be a Mandalorian and a Jedi. Like, Din tried to cut off his own leg.
Right.
Grogu could be the next Mandalorian / Jedi.
Mm.
I just have, only the Sith deal in absolutes, Luke. I just...
Oh, snap.
Ugh, I was fired up. Don't hurt my baby Grogu. So yeah, so this is where he's got to, and it's interesting that Skywalker promises that he'll be the first student is in his academy. But I have heard other things that say that Kylo was the first student in Luke's academy. So is that telling me that, does that give me the answer to what Grogu chooses?
Ooh.
I have this, let me tell you, like this episode's been on my mind a ton. I have like digested it and went over it a couple times. One, I hate surprises. Like, I just want to know. And so I'm trying to figure out what Grogu's going to decide, which he's going to choose to do and why. And I don't know if you have thoughts, because I know you said you had some thoughts on this episode too.
I think I said all my thoughts on this episode, honestly. I don't know.
But that's where they leave us. And I have a feeling that we're just going to, I don't think we're going to find this out next week, this week.
No.
I think this is where Mandalorian season 3 starts.
I mean, that is one thought. The other thought is that, you know, their war with the Pikes goes really poorly. And all of a sudden, as a deus ex machina, you know, a baby Grogu shows up in his little Mando armor and force chokes all the Pikes. And...
I think Grogu is going to choose to follow the Mandalorian. That's what I think.
I do too. Yeah. I kind of believe
that. He's got 900 years to be a Jedi. It's fine. He's got time.
No need to rush in. Well, we do hope all these questions and more get answered very soon. We only have a couple more days until the release of the season finale of Book of Boba Fett. Of course, we may have to wait until the official season 3 of The Mandalorian before some of this gets explored further.
I can't imagine them giving us all the answers at the end of this.
No.
The biggest question right now is how do they wrap all this up? Is Boba going to have another season?
Yeah.
That's the big question now is what is this finale going? Was this just a chapter in the quote unquote Mandalorian book? And now we'll just occasionally see Boba crossing over into that show or mm-hmm. what?
Who knows?
Dun, dun, dun.
But if you have any thoughts you would like to share about this episode, feel free to drop us an email at contact@waitingforobi.com or find us on Facebook at Waiting for Obi.
And come back to hear our thoughts and opinions on the final episode of The Book of Boba Fett.
We will see you all again next time.
Bye.
You have been listening to Waiting for Obi, presented by The Chance Cube. Thank you for spending time with us today. We hope you join us again. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/waitingforobi. Until next time, may the Force be with you. This program is a Rogue One, not affiliated with Lucasfilm or the Walt Disney Company.